Omar Nagy.
Juan Rodriguez.
Good evening, folks. This is Tommy Wolf joining the call. A very warm welcome. I know we have a lot of people still joining the conference call, so I'm going to give it about 30 seconds more for folks to join, and I'm going to go ahead and quiet the line. We have a very large number of people from all over the world tonight. Very excited to have you all here, but I'm going to mute the lines just so that we have a fairly decent line quality. Sounds pretty good to me, though. How does it sound to you out there?
Sounds fine.
Good. Okay. Well, let me go ahead and mute out the lines, and I'll get going here in about 30 seconds.
Hello, this is Alka.
Welcome. Welcome. Okay, folks, this is Tommy Wolf. Welcome to this month's success seminar. I am a professional career and success coach, and I'm president of Wolf Potential. And I am really excited to talk with you tonight because we're talking about a topic that's very close to my heart. I've spent 20 years in the corporate world, both here in the United States, where I live today, and in South Africa, where I was born. I've thrived during that time. And I've managed to achieve very high performance ratings. I've also been a serial entrepreneur with equal success. And the reason I wanted to talk with you tonight is because I believe we're looking at a working environment that I have never seen before. And for those of you who know me, I'm no longer a spring chicken. I'm not young anymore. But what we're seeing is different. We've never seen this before. I have seen, particularly in the corporate workspace, unprecedented frustration, burnout, and job dissatisfaction. Does that sound familiar for you? I know that it can't continue like this because we've got way too many people in the corporate world that is truly at breaking point. They're locked into jobs they hate because they're too scared that they won't be able to get a job somewhere else, or they're just working themselves into a standstill. And folks, that's really not in anybody's best interests. Clearly, companies can't afford to have disenchanted employees, and employees simply cannot thrive in jobs they're not enjoying. So the big question tonight is, what can we do? What can we do to really restore meaning and passion and burning desire back into our careers so that everybody wakes up really excited on Monday morning and looking forward to work? Well, I'm going to try and answer some of those questions tonight. So the first thing I'd like to do is congratulate you for being here. You're obviously the successful few. It's never easy to find an hour on anybody's calendar. And the people that do make themselves available for calls like this are generally the people that are going to really succeed or are already really succeeding. I've got some great content to share with you and some ideas which I'm excited about. I get asked why I share this content for free. I think it's a good question, so let me tell you. I coach mostly very successful people who are in transition with their careers. I've got a special love of this, and this material helps potential clients to know if we're a good fit and if we should work together. And if it helps anyone else on the phone tonight, I'm blessed to be able to help. So thank you for being with me. Kick back, shut out any distractions. My intention is for you to find new, better possibilities for your life. Have a pen and paper handy. Hopefully you've downloaded the presentation. We had a huge number of people on the call tonight, and if you're struggling to get to the servers to download the presentation, I wouldn't worry at this point. I'm going to talk clearly enough that if you aren't following in the presentation, you should still be able to get really good value from our talk. So let's move to slide two and have a look at the agenda. I'm going to start off looking at what's changed. I'm going to talk about what this means to you. Then I'm really going to focus on some usable tips in the workplace, what we need more of, what we need less of. And then I know a special concern to a lot of people in my audience is surviving offshoring. And I'm going to give you some tips for that as well. It's a very interesting audience tonight. We have people literally from all corners of the globe. I have India, Japan, Ireland, the UK, Brazil, and the bulk are from the United States. I'm really excited about this, and I think what's really particularly powerful about having such a big global audience is it really brings home to me that we're we're one world, and we've all got to find corporate solutions that work. There's no such thing as an American company or an Indian company anymore. We all rely on each other so much. As the recent recession told us, nobody can act in solitude. So I'm fascinated to have this audience on the phone, and it's going to be a very interesting talk. So let me start by looking at what's changed. And I'm not going back very far. I'm actually only going back about 5 years because there's been an enormous number of changes in that short period of time. Let's start with slide 3. There's basically two big changes as I see it, and I'm definitely simplifying a bit here. But firstly, the world is smaller, and not just a little bit smaller. It's kind of gone into this tiny little ball. It shrunk very significantly. And then the second big thing is we've had a recession that's left its aftermath globally. So let's look at the first point in a bit more detail, the world having grown smaller. And I'm moving on to slide 4 now. There's a couple of things that have really happened. I think the main one has to be technology. The advances we've had in the last 5 years have really made it pretty immaterial as to where somebody sits. Phone technology, information networks are cheap, they're lightning fast, they're getting faster by the day. I mean, I can't believe what happens with video and YouTube and just how many people are watching YouTubes every day. But as a result, the entire world communicates together and behaves as one. So the Twilight series of vampire books, which aren't exactly my cup of tea, but they became very popular in the USA, and snap, they're a worldwide phenomenon. The Greek financial system wobbles, and snap, the whole stock market plummets. A neat little video gets released on YouTube, and it goes viral in hours. You know, I mean, I've been fascinated with my own small contributions, but I posted a cancer article on my blog a month ago, just a lady who I really admired how she handled with her cancer. I thought it was a great survivor story. And the first person to comment on it was a Taiwanese doctor from the CyberKnife facility there. So, I mean, the world is just really tiny. Then the next thing is social media has taken us by storm. And, you know, folks, whatever you say about it, whether you like it or not, it's happening. This is how marketing's happening these days. I have, you know, well over 1,000 people following me on Twitter. I have no idea who they are. But I can talk with them, and more importantly, I can listen to them and find out what's going on. Youngsters, I have a teenage daughter, and I can tell you, you know, it's incredibly uncool if you can't communicate via Twitter, Facebook, texting, and so on. And the baby boomer generation, which I belong to, could easily lose the ability to communicate with Generation X and Y if we don't get with a program. So I wanted to share with you a little video. If you are in a sort of over 50 or over 40 age group and you're not that familiar with what social media is doing, I'd highly encourage you to go and have a look at this video. If you get onto YouTube and search for social media revolution, those words will find it. It's a little clip it's 4 minutes long, and it just has some amazing numbers in it. For example, it took the radio 38 years to reach 50 million people. Facebook added double that number of people in 7 months. So this is really giving an idea of the pace and speed of things. So I would encourage you to watch that video if you think that you can get away with not getting into social media. It will really change your mind. The key point here is everything's happening at lightning speed. And the hugest difference that this has brought with us is our workforce has changed. We used to work by country, so you'd have the US workforce and the English workforce and India, Argentina, Brazil, all over the world. We all had our own unique workforces. And what we've really seen in a tremendous booming surge in the last 5 years is that the workforce has gone global. So it really doesn't matter where you are in the world. You know, companies are using labor wherever they get the best deal. And I fully acknowledge from a worldview perspective, this is enormously beneficial to some of the developing countries. And I don't know if the developing countries can appreciate how incredibly disconcerting this has been for first world employees who've seen their jobs move somewhere else. So, and I will tell you the last thing I'm going to do tonight is talk a little bit about how you can prepare yourself to be in a good place if you are worried about your job going to another country. And by the way, guys, I don't think any country's safe. You know, right now, certain countries are enjoying a burgeoning growth in the job market, and I think particularly India, Brazil, Argentina, the Philippines, and so on. But I don't think anybody's immune. The minute there's a cheaper labor force somewhere else in the world, it's going to move there as well. So the problems that some of the more developed countries are having today are just a taste of what's coming for everybody. So the net is we all need to be a whole lot more competitive. Let's move to the next slide, slide 5. And this is really the other thing that's happened is the recession aftermath. Now, I have some numbers here that are just from the U.S., but my guess is that they are mirrored pretty well across the globe. The national unemployment rate here in April was close on 10%. Although the economic recovery has happened, we're still seeing mass layoffs, and almost 250,000 workers in April were laid off here. And I think what's particularly significant is the number of discouraged workers is up 385% since 10 years ago. So what we're seeing is people just aren't happy in their jobs. And in fact, there was a survey done by a consulting firm, Right Management, which said 60% of workers indicated they intended to leave their companies as the economy improves. Wow, 60% of people want to leave when the economy improves? So, I mean, this is kind of scary if you're an employee, and it's scary if you're an employer. There's just a lot of upset in the job market. Now, and this is why I really wanted to talk with you tonight. I feel like this means for us, and I'm moving on to the next slide now, slide 6. We're really in a kind of a thin ice job market. There is no more loyalty, and I think it works both ways. I think that, you know, companies, well, my parents started a job and they finished their career at the same company. That was what they did. They were loyal. And that's unheard of amongst the younger generation. And, you know, companies can't afford to be that loyal to you. And as a result, employees can't afford to be that loyal to their company anymore. There is stiff competition from all corners of the globe. And I don't think anybody in the world has a cushy job, because if somebody else anywhere can do it faster, cheaper, better, that's where the job's going to go. So I think it's fair to say there's an excellent chance that every single person on this call tonight has been affected negatively by these changes. And could I be bold enough to suggest that many of you are feeling frustrated and discouraged? Wow, sounds like more doom and gloom tonight. And in actual fact, I had more, and I took 7 slides out because I'm really not here to make everybody feel depressed at all. But what I did want to look at is, what can we do? And the good news is, there are things we can do here. I truly believe that every change presents opportunity, and I want to help you find them. So let's start on slide 7. I'm going to give you a bunch of things tonight that I really believe you all need to start doing more of. I'm going to share things with you that in my many years of managing people that I really felt was things I wished that I saw more from my employees. And if every employee did these, you would have no advantage, but not every employee is going to get this information. You're getting it because you've made time to be on the call tonight. So if you do all of these steps, it will definitely lead to a rosier environment for you to be working in. Let me move to slide 8 and have a look at passion. More passion. And clearly, loving what you do really, really pays off. We'd all love a job that we're passionate about, a job that has meaning and makes a difference and gets you fired up. And this is a job where you just can't wait to get in on Monday mornings and you just feel sad when it's Friday. And believe me, guys, I have a job like that. So it is possible to have a job like that. But I think, sadly, I see so many people playing it safe and going with a steady paycheck because they're terrified they won't find anything anywhere else, or they won't be able to have a blast where they're working. And let me tell you why I think this is getting really risky. Playing it safe at a job really doesn't work, because I think the future means people are going to be working longer and harder. And that's great if you're passionate about your job, but it's pretty tough if you're hating everything you do. A very wise man, Confucius, once said, "Find a job you love, and you will never have to work again." I think he said that very well. Find a job you love and you'll never have to work again. So people who are passionate are more innovative, they're more motivated, and employers love that. You know, there's nothing as fun as being fabulously good at what you do. So I deeply believe that you have the right to find a line of work you're passionate about. I really feel that for all the people hanging on to a job that's no longer working for them, and being too terrified that things aren't going to work anywhere else. I just think they're selling themselves way short. I've been in the corporate world. I've made a success of it out of it. If I can do it, I think anybody can. So life is just too short to spend time doing something that's lost its meaning for you. So now I've got a question for you. I'm a coach, so we ask questions for a living. But I want you to write this question down, and you might want to think about it. But the question is this. How much passion do you have for your job on a scale of 1 to 10? 10 being extremely high passion. How much passion do you have for your job today? Well, if you answered 7 and above, congratulations. Awesome. And if you answered anything below 7, I really think you've got a bit of thinking to do. Why are you where you are? And if you are planning to stay there, what are you going to do to reintroduce some passion and some fun and some payback in your life? Because just sitting in a job that's not working for you, even in this economy, I'd really believe is a bad idea. So we either need to fix where you are or we need to change where you are. And I think that's, I want to talk a little bit more about the entrepreneurial advantage, because everybody has a little bit more entrepreneur in them than they believe. And you can use that in two ways, and I'm moving on to slide 9 now. You can use entrepreneurial advantage within your own company, in a big corporate company, and you can use it to start your own job, whichever is the course you want to do. But I will tell you this, when a corporate careerist gets laid off or thrown off course, it's pretty scary and it can be debilitating. The reason that I want you to think about letting your entrepreneur loose, even within a corporate job, is because entrepreneurs overcome obstacles for a living. That's what they do. They tend not to be fazed by them, and they tend to be very resilient and look for other ways of getting around them. They look at everything as an opportunity. So the question is, with what everything that's going on in your market, there must be opportunities there. Employees increasingly value innovative workers. And of course they do, because they're coming up with better, cheaper ways to get the job done. So an entrepreneurial attitude can set you apart, even if you work for someone else. You know, often when something changes in the company, there's a huge amount of resistance. And I think there's real power in being the entrepreneur who takes advantage of the change. And even if your job is going to a different country, there's still people needed to train and motivate and interact. And, you know, there's always opportunities in any change. So really be the change agent in your company. Instead of resisting the flow of changes, try to jump on top of them, get in front of them, be the expert in your organization who knows where you're going to next. The next thing we need more of has always been there, but we really need it now. And it's, I call it extraordinary performance. Really top third performance is what you want to aim for. And when layoffs are happening, unless the entire department's going away or the entire function's going away, the top third performance area will keep you safe from getting laid off generally. And clearly that depends how much trouble your company's in, but but aiming for the top third is, I think, is a really good idea. And what I want to share with you now is a couple of things that I wished my employees had done for me when I was a boss in corporate America. And these are things that I felt they could have done better and really done to stand head and shoulders above the crowd. And most people do not do this. I would say in many cases, none of my employees were doing a real good job of this. The very first one is a very thoughtful selection of where you spend your effort. Today, most people are really overworked, and I get this. And many people don't come close to finishing their tasks every day. But you know what? This is true of every executive in the country. And one of the tricks in time management is being really choosy about what you actually do. So you can't do anything, or you can't do everything, but doing a really excellent job of picking what your big important tasks are for every day. If there's more than two or three, you're probably going to come unglued anyway. But pick them, and if you're not sure of what the priorities are, it's a very appropriate discussion with your boss. And then once you've picked them, do them amazingly. You know, pick enough that you can actually do them really, really well. And so if you have 20 tasks on your day and you only actually manage to get 3 or 4 done, but you do them better than anybody else, I promise you it will get you far more mileage than doing 20 tasks in a mediocre way. So really excel at the very important things. And the reason I think this is important is because it's also helping some of the workload management that we're all struggling with at the moment. So very, very careful work selection. Shine at the important things, and if you totally screw up on the less important things, oh well. And I know from having done this myself, you will still get your high performance ratings. My next tip is support your boss always. This should be a no-brainer, but I'm afraid it isn't. There are some relationships in life that simply have to be good, because any other scenario quickly becomes unmanageable. I think this is true for your boss. I actually think it's true for your in-laws as well, but we're not talking marital relations here. So there's really no room whatsoever for a poor relationship with your boss without big consequences. So the only exception I'd make to that is if your boss is actually doing something unethical or immoral, and in that case I kind of feel like you should be reported. But in every other situation, you just want to give your boss your unconditional support. Is this going to stop you from getting laid off? No. But let me tell you, it will give you a really strong edge, because the boss is always motivated to help grow you into a top performer when he enjoys doing business with you. I can tell you that all managers try hard to be fair with their employees, but there's something really enticing about pleasant, helpful people that are fun to work with. You definitely manage to find a little bit of extra motivation to help them. The next thing that I wanted to point out is how important strong people relationships are. You really want to make it your business to enjoy and have fun. Yes, fun today in the corporate world with everybody you touch. So have fun, network more, joke more. And then the other particular trick that I really think helps build strong relationships is help people. You know, I think there's no better way to help yourself in the world than to be really helping other people. So I feel that that's a trick that people could, just by being far more helpful, would really take them a long way. The next little item that I would like to see in top third performance is making yourself critical. So there are ways of becoming critical, okay? One of the best ways, and this only works if you're in a customer-facing job, but if you are in a customer-facing job, having really, really strong customer relationships is a huge asset. I've worked in a situation where one of my employees was so loved by his customer that we couldn't ever move him. I mean, we certainly couldn't have laid him off or probably even risked him going anywhere else. We had to look after him because of the customer relationship. But that's not the only opportunity for becoming critical. Critical is also the only person to understand a certain tool, or the only person who does a certain task, or to have limited sought-after skills. But my feeling is, with things as competitive as they are in the marketplace, if you're not critical, you're probably, in some way, you know, you have probably reason to be worrying. And then the last thing I wanted to add, and this should also be a no-brainer, but it isn't, don't get to be the problem for your boss. Your boss has plenty of problems already, so try never to be the one that brings the problem to his desk. And I have got a fabulous tip for this coming up in a little while. I think it's actually the reason I used to get one ratings. So let's move to my next chart, which is slide 11. And guys, I thought long and hard about even bringing this up, because I think it's a sensitive topic with a lot of people. But I've called this thing that we want more of, more smarts. This is really just more skills, more competitive skills that we can use in the marketplace. And the chart you're looking at here, it's an old chart, and it's 8th grade math, and you could certainly argue, what's that got to do with anything, and maybe it doesn't. But the point I want to make here is that the world's got different skills in different pockets, and it's not very evenly placed. And there are some very small countries that can have some very outstanding training and education for their employees. And I think that it is very arrogant for any country anywhere to assume that they are better than any other country because of their education. I think one's really just got to realize that if you aren't personally taking ownership for being academically and with your skill set being really on the leading edge, it's just a big mistake. So what are the things you can do? Well, the consulting firm McKinsey found that the very highest paid workers tend to be those that have got weird, unusual blends of skills. For example, an MBA chemist or a lawyer working in the United States who could speak Mandarin Chinese. You know, that would be an example of a mixed degree. Or a lawyer who has a lot of experience in the entertainment industry. So don't be scared to take skills from a former life or a passion for a language and add that to your skill set, because it appears to be that this is what's making people successful going forward. So other things you can do to compete: make sure you've got appropriate certifications in your area, in your area of expertise. So if you're a project manager, get your PMI certifications, get your, you know, take the evening classes you wanted to from the local college, start learning the language you've always wanted to. Informal learning from networking, and there's a great American word that I learned when I came to the USA, and I love it. They call it schmoozing. I don't think it's an English dictionary. Maybe it is. But schmoozing is really just forming good relationships for the right people. Schmoozing is important too. And then the other key thing in terms of just upping your competitive skills is embrace change. You know, whenever anything new comes out in your organization, be the one to jump on the tools and the programs and become the expert in it. Volunteer on anything strategic. Even learning something arcane will help you stay mentally limber if your work demands a sudden shift and you need a crash course in something you've never heard of. So the key message here is keep learning. Be studying, be learning. I don't think anybody gets to a point in their life where they're too old or there's no point in learning. Okay, I'm kind of excited to talk about the next thing. I want to talk about branding. And I think branding is a very helpful tool in the corporate workplace. The people on the call who run businesses, the entrepreneurs, are already doing branding for the, for themselves. But in the corporate world, sure, the corporation has branding. If you're Coca-Cola, everybody knows what the The Coca-Cola brand stands for. If you're with IBM, everybody knows what IBM stands for. But I believe that people can use branding, personal branding, in a very powerful way. An entrepreneur spends a great deal of time and money making sure that the potential market knows exactly what's special and unique and valuable about them. Which customers do they want to attract, what their problems are, and how they can be positioned. And the key thing is, this is something you can do for yourself. You know, what is unique about you? What's special about you? Who should be attracted to you? What services can you do? How can you solve people's problems? So this is really useful inside a company, and I think it'll give you a really great edge. Everybody should have a personal brand, and you'll find this very powerful. So let me give you a couple of questions to help you on your way here. So take these down, and you can work on this yourself and come up with a great branding statement. And I think you'll find it's a very good platform for becoming essential and a critical skill within your own company. So number one, who is your customer? And if you're in your own business, this is really your ideal target customer. But who is your customer? So in corporations, you might want to think of your internal customers or your external customers, but be very specific about who they are. So question one, who is your customer? Question two, what are the problems and frustrations they face? What are the problems and frustrations they face? And how does it make them feel? Is this frustrating? Is this worrying? Does this make them fearful? How do they feel with those problems? And then question three, what benefits do you bring to the situation to solve the problem? So you want to think about your strengths and talents here. What are the benefits you bring? Okay, so when you've had a bit of time to put those three questions and answer them as specifically as you can, you want to put this together and make it your brand. And let me give you an example, and I'll give you my branding statement, and you'll see how this fits in. So who is your customer? My customer is ambitious careerists, people who are very keen on having amazingly successful careers. So that's my target market, my customer. What are their problems and their frustrations, and how does this make them feel? My problem is a lot of people in the corporate world are overwhelmed with work, and they're worried and frustrated with their career prospects. Okay, so that's how they're overwhelmed and frustrated. Those are the problems my customers have. What benefits do I bring to the situation? I help them discover meaning, passion, and bring extraordinary success. I also help them find the job of their dreams if they're not already in it. So those are the talents that I bring to the situation. So if I put it together, I help ambitious careerists who are overwhelmed with work and frustrated with career prospects to discover meaning, passion, and extraordinary success in the job of their dreams. So that's kind of the statement I'm looking for from you. And if you can put that together for yourself, it's actually very powerful. It starts to become your unique criticalness in an organization. It starts to be something you can capitalize on and do a bit of training on and just make sure that you get better and better at this. So, and I did want to offer you something here. You know, I offer 30-minute breakthrough coaching sessions to anybody. I offer them for free. And if you're struggling with coming up with your own brand, I'm very happy to help you do this. Spend up to 30 minutes with you doing it. My contact details are on the last page of the presentation, and I would like to give you that offer tonight. So, all right, let me move to the next thing that we need more of, flexibility. And I'm on slide 13 for those of you that are following along. In the past, baby boomers ended their careers in the same fields they started in. Generation X and Y aren't going to do that. So, you know, careers hot up and cool down really fast these days. Anybody here remember the dot-com boom and bust not so long ago? So you really want to be in a position where you want to take advantage of what's hot. So if you've been sitting in the same old job for a very long time, it's quite possible you're missing out on some very hot opportunities. There are things in the market that are flaring and burgeoning at the moment, even in the recession. And there's also other areas within your company where you might want to be taking more advantage of things that are cool and strategic. So the thing here is that changing fields or careers might well mean for you more training, more education, but the flexibility can be a really big career boost. So what can you do to position yourself and be ready for strategic opportunities and be flexible? I think the big thing you can do here is really think about your skill set and possibly try and repackage. So for example, if you write down every skill, talent, and gift that you have and keep adding to it, keep thinking about everything that you can do and don't limit it just to your current job. Take former jobs, take your hobbies, take skills that you're naturally good at. If you're a great organizer in a job that has nothing to do with organizing, put it down. And then really think, I think just even knowing what your skills and talents are will help you see different opportunities when they come up. But you can also repackage things. I mean, for example, I knew a project manager, an IT project manager, who had very good project management skills and went on to become a dynamite wedding planner. So, you know, it's not, it can look pretty different, but the skills are the same. I mean, you basically really need to be able to organize things, whether it's IT or wedding planning or anything in between. So make sure that you have a skill list that you're thinking about deeply and, you know, check back on them and include everything. All right. Let's look a little bit at balance, and I'm moving to slide 14. And I know a lot of people are like, what balance? You've got to be kidding me, right? So, and I know, I fully get that it's really tough to balance right now in a highly competitive job. And some of you are still trying to be awesome parents and sexy partners, and, you know, it's a lot to ask. So the only way to do this is to put up boundaries. You have to put up boundaries as to I'm this far and no further to try and maintain the balance. The most common question I get in corporate America is, I don't even have time to do my job. How am I expected to have a life around that as well? So it's clear that there are a lot of people working way too hard. And I will tell you guys, there's absolutely nobody who will change that situation other than you yourself. So I want to share with you some things I know for sure. I sound like Oprah here. Doesn't she have what I know for sure? But these are things I know for sure about balance. I have never met an old person who wished that they made more money on the job. And I challenge you to go and find any old special person in your life and ask them if they wish they'd made more money at their job. It tends not to be something people wish for. Number two, your job may well stroke your ego, but it will never love you and it will never care for you the way your family and your friends do. So you need to be there for your friends and your family as well. So can you say that about your job? Because your friends and family will be there for you. The other thing I want to tell you is you never know how long you have in your life. It's very important that you're living it the way you want to. I will tell you a story tonight, and I don't often tell this story because it's a little close. but I was born as a spoiled brat kid in South Africa against the apartheid era. I was the white kid who had every advantage and didn't even know, you know, I just did what other kids did. It took me a long time to realize that I was taking advantage of other people in South Africa. But I had a very easy, cushy, privileged life and got married to, you know, my childhood sweetheart, who was this big, handsome man that I adored, and everything just went so well. And, you know, I was just chugging along. Everything was great. And we had our first baby, and, you know, 11 weeks later, I kissed him goodbye for work on one Monday morning, and I never saw him again. He was killed on the way to work in a car accident. So I can tell you, when I looked at the work that I'd been doing the previous year or two, and the weekends I'd worked on a special project and proposal we were working, and some of my choices, it wasn't the right thing to do. You know, it really made me realize that people are incredibly important to you, and feeling like we all are going to live to 104 years old is probably not a real good idea. So I always feel like, I mean, the one thing that lesson really taught me, and it has a happy ending, I met another amazing man here in America, and I'm very happily married today. So life goes on, but the key lesson I learned from that is make sure you're living your life now as if you would if you knew you only had another year or two. And the last thing I know for sure is don't take your health for granted. Nobody thinks about this, especially when they're young. Until they lose it. But nothing's fun without your health. You really aren't much use to your family or your job if you die from a heart attack. So, and I know I'm giving you some really hard, gut-wrenching things here, but this is what's truth about balance. And you're the only person who can actually take control. So the best tip I have for people that are overworked and unable to find balance, and I told my big rock story 2 months ago at my success seminar, and I don't want to bore the people that have been on the call at that time. But if you Google big rocks and time management on the internet, you'll probably come up with a story, and I think it's a really good one. But let me just say this, and I hinted at it earlier. If you pick one or two top big hitters at work, no more than three things a day, I call these the big rocks of the day. They're your highest impact, most important things of the day. Give them 100% focus. Do them thoroughly and really well. It shouldn't take more than 3 or 4 hours of your day. Block out time in your calendar to do them, and do them amazingly. And then just cope with the rest as best you can. And I assure you that this will get you the high ratings that you're desiring. And then I hope in your big rocks you've also scheduled in time for family, fun, and exercise, because, guys, life actually isn't worth living. No job's worth forfeiting those things for. So, right, I've finished giving you the things that I think we should have a bit more of. I'd like to spend a bit of time talking about the things we should have a bit less of. And I do want to just reiterate that if things are going to get better, they have to change. And change is never comfortable, but most of you aren't real comfortable right now. So here are the things that we need to get rid of. The first one, and I'm now on slide 16, is mediocrity. You know, I think in the good old days we all felt like we deserved jobs, and it's kind of changed. We kind of earn jobs now. It's clear that jobs are scarce. Many people think that high unemployment is going to last a while. So what's different this time compared with prior recessions is we're competing around the world for cheap labor. And I don't care what country you're in, you're always going to be under pressure from somebody. So I think it's really clear that employers these days have a rich pool of talent to choose from. And it means that workers need every edge they can get. So expecting good pay for mediocre work is so over. It's not going to happen anymore. And the winners are going to be those who hustle, those who do more than is asked, those who swallow their pride from time to time. Employers just don't have to have tolerance for people who complain and do less. But they're really rewarding the ones that do more. And I can tell you that when the recovery speeds up a little bit here, the ones that have been doing more will be the ones in line for the long-awaited raises and promotions. So less mediocrity. The next thing we need less of has got nothing to do with work, but I think it's relevant. And it's less stuff. And for my international audience, everybody in America knows what stuff is. We fuel the world's economy by our incredible buying power, and you know, many of our families here have a large amount of stuff. Our basements are full, our garages are full, and and this has actually been going on for some 25 years. And I think the last recession has actually helped us away, because many of us have learned to live with a great deal less, much, much less than we used to live with. So a couple of those basements are a bit emptier, and the garages are probably a bit tidier. But I will tell you, sticking to the essentials and learning to save a lot more money and live off less stuff is a really, really great lesson, especially if you're funding your lifestyle with debt. Spending less and saving more will significantly raise the odds that you can survive a crisis or pounce on an opportunity. So the key lesson is less stuff gives you more flexibility. We can all live on less, and this will actually help with my next career rule, which I think we need less of, and that is less paycheck dependence. You know, for many years, we've kind of, you know, certainly in the States, we've relied on husband and wife both working and two paychecks, and we've just counted on the fact that there'll be an increase every year and a bonus and things will go up each year, and we've borrowed to the hilt on houses. And I think the key thing is here, I don't think we can count on this going forward. Losing your job is a great deal more common now, and I think really there's a whole move to not being dependent on paychecks. And I think in a job, many people are trying to pursue meaning instead of ambition. So pursuing the best opportunities and giving yourself the flexibility to do the jobs you really love and are passionate about may well mean that you have a period of reduced pay or even no pay. So I think today's workers should really be making sure they have plenty of savings to cover transition periods or to finance new education. So I think it's a mistake to get addicted to the monthly paycheck. I think there should be a focus on emergency funds in place so that you can cover career changes. And I would be very cautious about getting fully committed to expensive homes or other huge assets that could prevent you from moving and having the flexibility to move where the best opportunities are. So even a typical career has setbacks and sabbaticals. So I wouldn't count on earning your money in a nice upward curve. So just to summarize, what can you do here? Make sure you're not living to your whole paycheck. And if you are, consider making some lifestyle changes. It will really give you a lot more flexibility. Set up emergency funds and really start working at having an emergency fund to allow you to follow new opportunities when they emerge. We keep hearing this tonight. Spending less or saving more will give you the flexibility to follow and pursue passionate work paths. Slide 19 talks about less complacency. I think we've all had it good for a long time, and certainly when I was a manager, I definitely had employees in my office really frustrated, saying, oh, you know, I've done the work, why can't I get the promotion? And even though sometimes their performance was pretty unremarkable. So my key point here is, you know, realize we're going to have to work for the job and realize there is going to be competition globally wherever you are. We really do need to compete effectively. And the last thing that we want less of is complaining, and I'm on slide 20. So, and I'm going to give you a really great tip here, a really, really great tip, so I hope you're listening closely. I will tell you that complaining and whining never works in any corporate situation anymore, and probably never did. You know, your manager has too many choices of other people these days. But quite apart from that, even if he didn't have anybody, it's really unprofessional. And more than that, it doesn't work. So if you need to let off steam, may I suggest your dear spouse, your good buddies, or somebody else, but don't complain to your manager who already is managing, you know, 30-plus people who are also probably sitting at his doorstep and complaining. But let me tell you how to handle complaints, because it's not like you shouldn't take every problem to the boss. Clearly, a lot of problems do need to be raised up the management chain. But there's a way of doing it that makes you look like a total rock star. So let me give you this tip, and folks, don't underestimate this tip. I truly believe this is why I achieved a one rating almost 80% of my 20 years in corporate worlds. So this is a good tip. Somebody gave it to me years ago. I pass it on to you. Firstly, don't talk to your boss until you're calm and collected. Then, and here's the magic, take the problem to him with at least two thoughtful recommendations on how to fix it. This is a secret trick, oil on troubled waters. Your boss needs solutions, and you get to be the knight in shining armor to do it. You get to look like Mr. Fix-It. You take the problem away from your boss just when you thought you were adding one. And let me tell you, the other people on your team are adding problems. So, you've given him choices, so the boss gets an opinion. You get his buy-in. This is cool. It works. And you get a lot of competitive advantage doing this, because I can tell you, in all my years managing, I had very few people who would ever come to me with a problem and a couple of solutions at the same time. I've done it personally for years and years, and this works. This really works. So that really kind of wraps up what I wanted to say, what we need more of and what we need less of. But I do want to ask you for something else tonight. And this is kind of exciting. I feel like because the corporate environment's so tough, and because I really believe that employees need a clever way to recharge their batteries and remotivate themselves, I'm coming up with a new product, and I actually want to ask you for your help to help me put this thing together in a good way. It's a new coaching idea. Usually I coach my clients one-on-one, and it's pretty pricey, and, they're getting one-on-one coaching. But I'm trying to come up with a product that's more accessible to more people, so it's just a lot more affordable to folks. And if you look at slide 21, you'll see a picture of what I have in mind. And I'd like to have a couple of people volunteer to help me, just be part of a focus group, just trying to help me set this up. So group coaching, I think, has the potential to be awesome. And, I think what's good about it is it's much more affordable. I think it can allow people to get decent coaching and not cost the earth. It's much more fun in groups. There's accountability. You build a whole success network, and you've got relationships. You can leverage off each other. So there's just a whole good dynamic that happens. And there's a whole bunch of topics. I'm still trying to design it, but I'm imagining something happening once a week for a three-month period and talking about topics where, it's a much smaller group. We have about 15 to 20 people on the phone, and a couple of people get one-on-one coaching each time, and we have a theme for each week, like branding or job hunting or resumes or climbing the ladder, work-life balance. And I'm really looking for a team of people who can tell me what are the topics. I've got some ideas, but I'd like to make sure I'm hitting the right spot. So what I'm asking from the focus group is that I've got a questionnaire I'd like filled out, and it's probably going to be teleconferences just to talk through the details. And in return, I will definitely give big discounts or free stuff, probably both. So if that sounds like something you're interested in helping me design, email me and we can work together, and I will definitely give huge discounts in the future to anybody who's helped me put this thing together. So, folks, I think that really comes to the end of what I wanted to talk about for the most part. Oh, no, it didn't. I promised you that I would give you some surviving offshoring tips. So let me do that as promised, and I'm on slide 22 now. I'd be really interested to hear from people abroad as to how worrying this is if you're actually in Brazil and India and Argentina and, so some of the countries far away. I'd love to. Please email me. Let me know what you think of this. But certainly here in the States, it's pretty scary because a lot of our jobs are going offshore, and it's been very, very traumatic for folks. But there are a couple of advantages, and I believe these advantages apply to every country because I think every country is going to be under threat in some way for offshoring of jobs. But I did want to just make sure that people are aware of the home ground advantages that they have, so that the top performers, the people I have on the call, are making sure they're using these to good advantage. And here are the tips that I have. One of them is, if you can be customer-facing, that's awesome, and it's a really good time to develop strong face-to-face relationships with customers. Customers can keep you safe from layoffs. I have seen them escalate right up the chain in corporations, right up to the top to say so-and-so stays. They have a lot of power. And I think having strong face-to-face relationships, and I'm talking amazing relationships here, is really, really good. The other thing that you have is, within your own country, travel is clearly cheaper than traveling from anywhere else in the world. So if you're the person who is prepared to travel and volunteers to travel it within your own country, you definitely get to have a bit of advantage there, because it's something they tend to want to use the local labor force for. This isn't ideal for everybody. If you've got small children, this ain't going to be it for you, and there's other tricks here you can use. But be aware of that, and if you do have travel opportunities, they often can help keep your job safe. The next one is reading the situation. So let's face it, when you're in an office environment working side by side with people, you are uniquely placed to see opportunities, fix problems that people far away with a language barrier aren't even going to notice. So this is the schmoozing word again, right? So wherever you are in the world, make sure you're schmoozing in your local environment, making sure you're connecting, reading the local situation. And the next one is relationships. If you have an opportunity to get face-to-face, a lot of people work in home offices today, but if you have the ability to go into the office, I'd highly encourage you to do that as often as possible, because those relationships are going to be stronger inside and outside with customers as well. So you really want to foster relationships. They can definitely help. They won't save you entirely, but they can definitely help. And the last thing that I would always say is performance, performance, performance. And we spoke a bit about top third performance today, but performance is likely to remain really strong. So good luck to you guys. I do want to, before I wrap up tonight, just ask you, I really depend on the input I get. I want to bring a decent product and a good message to people. There's a survey on the same page that you downloaded the presentation from tonight. Please take 2 minutes. It really is a two-minute survey. It's very, very short. And I'm extremely grateful for this feedback. I did want to remind you that I do offer 30-minute rapid results coaching sessions to folks that are interested. So if you're having a job problem, get hold of me and we can set something up. My contact details are here. And for those of you that are in the Colorado area, I did want to tell you I have a live event at the Hotel Boulderado on July 10th. It's going to be an amazing, fabulous day talking about plans, strategies, and goals, and people are going to walk out with a life plan for 5 years. It's going to be really cool. So I hope you've enjoyed tonight's talk. I'm here if you have questions. I love hearing from you. Use the contact details above, and thank you so much for coming tonight. I would open the call up for questions, but I actually just have way too many people on the call to be managing a Q&A session. So I'm actually going to end and give you back 10 minutes of your day. Thank you so much, everybody, for being here. I appreciate you all. Good night.